As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Barrels. It's Monday, March 18th. Derek Van Riper, Eno Saris here with you on this episode. We get you caught up on some news and notes from around the league over the course of the weekend. A lot of injury information, unfortunately. It is that time of year. And then we dig into tough ranks on the hitter side. So we got two episodes beginning of the week. We have our tough ranks for hitters. We have our tough ranks for pitchers coming out on Tuesday. We'll be on planes on Tuesday. So if we say anything about someone who has suffered an injury in the last like 12 to 24 hours, that will be the reason why. So there's one disclaimer. We'll put one in the Tuesday episode itself. A lot of ground to cover though today. And a quick note, this is the last call for the Listener League for 2024. Get the current link in the Discord. We're currently on League 6. That means we have over 1,000 entries so far. One per person, please. Lineup lock, 10 p.m. Eastern. On Tuesday for the whole season. No in-season pickups, no in-season moves. Shout out to our friends at Fantrax for having the customization options available for us to even put this together. And again, shout out to Jeff Good for doing the heavy lifting, making the cap, making the leagues, and answering a lot of questions in the Discord. So go to the Discord, get the link, sign up, and submit your lineup before 10 o'clock Eastern on Tuesday night to get in on the fun for the Listener League this season. If you're playing in a traditional league, you're the commissioner, looking for a place to play, check out Fantrax. Lots of options as far as customizations go. Really deep player pool, too, if you play Keeper or Dynasty Leagues.
It's really nice of them to put that together. I've got a team. I didn't do any spreadsheets or calculators or anything special on this one. I tried to be a little different than myself as well, because trying to beat people who listen to me talk about baseball a lot. So I got to do something a little different.
I got in your head when I poisoned the well last
week. Yes, you did. Without even telling me what your plan was, just by telling me, by pointing out the plan, the fact that everyone's going to know my plan.
It's Princess Bride grade trickery. So I have tried to convince everybody listening to the show to do something different than what they want to do, so I can do the exact thing that I want to do and just walk right on up that leaderboard. That is my plan.
You'd like to think that, wouldn't you?
Well done. Which one has the poison in it?
We get to our news and notes here as we get started, and we get some fresh ranks on the site, by the way. Top 300 hitters. Eno's got updated pitchers. We got all this stuff going for you as draft weekends continue to pick up. But news that is very important: Yuri Perez dealing with some elbow soreness right now. Initially, it was like a couple of fingernail-related problems he was dealing with that were cutting his start short, but he reported some elbow soreness coming out of his last outing, and we're still kind of in this uncertain window as far as whether or not he's going to miss significant time or if it's going to be more like, I don't know, the Garrett Cole situation, but it doesn't look great. And I think when you consider that the Marlins had to find a way to manage his innings somewhat this year anyway, knowing that he's got soreness, even if it's just inflammation and not the result of a tear, you could see pretty easily how they would err on the side of caution now with the hope of making this problem go away and then have a cleaner runway once he's back to just let him work like a regular starter.
Sort of desperate times in Miami, you know, with Braxton Garrett out as well. And Sandy Alcantara out for the year. Like, I think the manager was like, can you pitch for us tonight? We'll actually talk about a couple guys in this rotation in tomorrow's podcast. And we'll talk about this situation, I think, in more depth. But it makes me think that Ryan Weathers is going to make the team. And there's some interesting stuff plus numbers for Ryan Weathers. It's the best I've ever seen his fastball. It's like 108 stuff plus on his fastball. That's really weird. He did get beat around in his last start, but he has 21 strikeouts in 18 innings. I don't know. Put Ryan Weathers somewhere on your draft board, I guess.
I would say the other name that gets a big bump in the short term is someone we already like. It's Max Meyer. I mean, 7 scoreless in Grapefruit League play so far. And even if you have to manage his innings, you have to have enough quality arms out there if you're the Marlins to just make your season matter. So you're going to have to put somebody out there who's good. You can't go to all the depth options. You can't go entirely NRIs to bridge the gap. So I'd give Meyer a nudge up in the rankings a bit. Kind of like Luis Gil situation in the Bronx, where it might not be a permanent spot all year. In Meyer's case, there's probably a better chance of him just sticking. And we've talked before about this team maybe being a good candidate to utilize a 6-man rotation. Maybe not at the beginning of the season, but at various points. So that's on the table as well. But I think in the immediate future, Yuri Perez, for these next couple of days, at least until we get more information, is just sort of on the do not fly unless it's super late list for me. I just think there's a lot of reasons to be extra cautious with him.
Yeah, I'm super angry that I have some team somewhere with the early Yuri Perez. Might even be TGFBI.
It's just, I'm just like, mad he's hurt because I want to see him pitch. Like, it's...
Also, funny, I've been texting you off and on just random thoughts as I look through the box scores at night.
That's right. You told me you were going to do that, and I forgot you were doing it, and you sent me a weird text last night, and now I remember why you did it. So thank you for reminding me, because I meant to ask you.
If you're looking on YouTube, you can see I sent him a screen grab of the Marlins game, and you can see, look at who started the game. Blank. Blank. 3 innings. 3 strikeouts, 1 walk.
Blank. Don't you worry about blank. Let me worry about blank.
Yeah, I just feel like that's an encapsulation of what it's like to be in Miami right now. Let's put blank in. Blank's got 5.
Blank's got a healthy arm. Blank's going to go out there and chew up some innings for us today. Yeah, it is the sad state of things right now. Hopefully we get some good news on Yuri here in the near future, but that's where things stand, at least at the time of this recording, around 1:30 Eastern on Monday. Another big injury item that came through over the weekend, TJ Friedl out with a fractured wrist. He's obviously going to be out through opening day. This is a 3 to 4 week window before he gets reassessed. And I think that means he's probably out more like, I don't know, 6 to 8, because it's going to take him some time to rehab. And if everything looks okay, it's going to be a lengthy rehab assignment to get his timing back at the plate. Kind of an important player for the Reds, though, too, because for all the depth they have, Friedl is their best defensive option in center field. So they take a hit defensively, and while they've got a guy like Will Benson who can play more and at least be sort of interesting for fantasy purposes, Friedl's more in this bucket of player that I just wanted to see because I was so skeptical of the power coming off of last year, and nothing's changed as far as his opportunity. He's still playing in the park that helped him get to 18 homers. Now we have this absence and an injury that even when he comes back, you always worry about a wrist injury like this, if it's slow to heal, if there's still some lingering soreness, being something that can really kind of sap production for a while once he's eventually off the IL.
This and shoulder are one of the worst for power production, and he was kind of somebody that I had circled as, you know, being almost a kind of a tough rank because I just didn't know where his power level really sits. 107 max EV and like a 4% barrel rate for his career. Those are numbers that in Seattle might give you 6 homers and a, you know, a sub 100 ISO. How much is that park going to inflate it? We've seen For him, more of like a 20 home run pace as a Cincinnati Red. A lot of homers at home, not so many on the road. So now there's even more uncertainty with regards to his TJ Friedl's power. When we get into the outfield discussion, I think Jake Fraley might play some center, at least by outs above average. What you see is Friedl was first, Stuart Fairchild was second, Jake Fraley was third. Will Benson was a minus in the outfield, as were Senzel and Steer. These are qualified attempts, but you kind of want to keep that qualifier on there for defensive stats, I feel like. I don't want to really talk about tiny ones. What we have seen, another thing that I texted you was like weird, player eligibilities. Jonathan India has played first base and left field. So I think he benefits a little bit from the Noel V. Marte and TJ Friedl situations, where you can have Jamer Candelario, Christian Encarnacion Strand, Spencer Steer all playing and leaving a corner outfield or first base slot for Jonathan India still to play. And so I think India, at least to begin the season, may be very close to an everyday player. And that leaves, I believe, Fraley being the lead contender for starting in center, Benson starting in right, Stuart Fairchild makes the team as the defensive replacement.
Right. I think Fairchild could end up in a platoon, too. They don't play Fraley a lot against lefties, so we could see Fairchild get those starts for really, really deep leagues out there. But this is one of those situations. I would say the Jonathan India playing time bump is kind of similar to what Whit Merrifield gets in Philly, where if you're trying to project playing time for the first half of the season, it's closer to an everyday role. And once you look at July and beyond, maybe it's different then, but it could change 10 other ways between now and then, because more guys could be hurt. Like, there's a number of reasons why he could continue play. He could just play well and end up playing more in the second half than expected. So definitely
they're
opens
kind of
up
like
time for
him. The sixth starter of a rotation, you know, the fifth or sixth starter. You're like, they're going to play, and they're probably going to get to, you know, 550, 600 plate appearances maybe, but will I want them all the way through? And will it be, you know, different paces at different times of the season?
More news on the injury front. Josh Lowe will open the season on the IL with an oblique injury. Not a total shock. I believe it was Christy Ackert from the Tampa Bay Times who had a grade 1 oblique strain diagnosis. This is the kind of injury, like any soft tissue thing, is one of those injuries that you can push it and you run a slightly increased risk of it being a lingering problem with a setback, or you can shut down for a slightly longer period of time, make it go away, and then sort of come back and have a slightly better chance of not having a setback. So I do wonder, because of the depth the Rays have, if they will opt for a more cautious approach, and this will be a longer end of the timetable sort of recovery for Josh Lowe, in hopes that he can come back and just be the player he was last year from like May on. Because I think obliques usually are more than the minimum as far as an IL stint. Usually they're closer to a month before they go away, even at the lower end of the severity scale.
It's interesting because it's an oblique game right now. Baseball is an obliques game. You're trying to turn your body fast. You know, that's pretty much really important. If you look at the, you know, the research, trunk rotation and bat speed, trunk rotation and arm speed, very high correlations. The oblique is helping you turn your trunk. And it's one of those ones, I think you got it perfectly. I was talking to Greinke about this one time. You just have to wait. And then at some point you have to try. And if it hurts, you have to stop and you have to wait. So there you can feel good and you can be like, well, we waited long enough, and then you try it and you're like, dang, you know. So it is, that's I think why it takes so long, is because you feel like, oh, we'll just wait longer so that we are you don't feel it when you do it, but then you could still feel it anyway when we ramp you up. So I think the Rays depth chart on Fangraphs is hilarious. They literally have 8 players with playing time at second base. I haven't seen many depth charts like this. I mean, 8, and there's no joke. They could all play second base. We got Brandon Lau, Ahmed Rosario, Taylor Walls, Curtis Meade is playing second base in spring. Jonathan Aranda's actually been playing more first base. Richie Palacios has played some second base. Jose Caballero is a middle infielder by trade. He's like one of the few on here that would play a good second base. And then they put Isaac Paredes over there too. So just a ridiculous depth chart. Johnny DeLuca and Richie Palacios now make the team.
DeLuca's hurt too, though.
Oh.
Yeah, DeLuca broke his hand. He actually, I think he got hit by a pitch. So 4 to 6 weeks for him, which I think when I look at their depth chart, I mean, Randy Arozarena locked in left. I think Jose Siri is pretty locked in center. I think you're looking at right field now, and that's probably like the Richie Palacios, Harold Ramirez, or Amed Rosario sort of platoon. So I think Richie Palacios is going to play a lot with Josh Lowe out.
I noticed on Mike Curlin's MLB Playing Time site that Harold Ramirez might pick up outfield eligibility. I think he's got 2 or 3 starts this spring now in the outfield. So that's definitely, they're already trying that out. And I think the Jonathan Aranda playing first base situation is a little bit of an admission that maybe Aranda's going to be the DH. So the big boosts here are Aranda and Richie Palacios, because you've formed an opinion about Harold Ramirez anyway, and I don't think this changes that opinion.
No, you use him.
He plays
selectively.
He's better in some situations than others. But the guys that maybe were on the bubble that now make the team are Aranda and Richie Palacios.
Right, you kick the can further down the road with the Ramirez roster decision because of the DeLuca injury. I think that's the takeaway there. And I would say that the Josh Lowe situation, if you have a league that has IL spots, he's still good enough to draft him and use a limited number of IL spots on a player like him.
Oh, I think he's good enough even in like a NFBC situation where you only have 7 bench spots. Come
exactly.
on.
Exactly. But
you can only have like 1 or 2 of those.
So. That's the problem. So I think you'll get a nice discount. I think he is worth it, but just make sure you're changing your plans as far as a prospect that you might stash that you wanted to have previously. If you take Josh Lowe at the discount, you probably aren't taking a shot like that later on in the draft. And that shot might be on a former Ray, or at least it would have been, on Kyle Manzardo. The Guardians sent Manzardo to minor league camp. Tough one because you wonder, like, how long is this really going to last? How long is Kyle Manzardo going to be playing in Columbus instead of in Cleveland?
Yeah, I don't understand it necessarily. I wonder if it has something to do with different like options. Like, there's so many times when like there's just like a, oh, this guy has options, this guy doesn't, you know, like that that could be going on. I see Manzardo had 24 plate appearances. Josh Naylor had 40, so they weren't quite playing him a ton, but he was hitting .381, no homers, but a fair amount of doubles. I guess they just looked at this roster and said, Naylor is our first baseman, and even if he platoons, we're not going to have Manzardo up to platoon. And Davison de los Santos is a Rule 5 pick that he has to be on the roster all year to make it through. He has been up and down, has had some good numbers in the minors, but was at 88 WRC plus in Double A last year. Is also 20 years old. So with the age at level, you know, work there, this is somebody that could be above average with the bat, be a terrible defender, but maybe he's the DH-ish and the guy who plays instead of Naylor against lefties. I saw him playing some third too.
I think you probably just let Naylor play against everybody, don't you?
And then De Los Santos is in a platoon with like Laureano at DH.
Or like, so Roster Resource has it set up in a way that kind of makes sense for me. Yeah, like if Floreal's playing in the outfield, and I mean, it sort of depends on what you do with Miles Straw. If Miles Straw's on your roster still, he's playing center field for his defense, and then Floreal's kind of a floater, sometimes corner guy, usually DH, and he's a lefty, so you'd sit him against lefties and let De Los Santos play there. But this is the cost of having a Rule 5 pick and trading for Floreal. This is like they created a roster logjam that is putting pressure on guys that we definitely don't like as much long term as we like Manzardo. Yeah. And it might even hurt him in the short term too.
You know what this seems like? This is like asset acquisition at all costs. You know, it's like, we just need to have more players. Get me more players. And like, so you get Florial, you know, who he's got to be out of options. Yeah, he's out of options.
Yeah, he's
so,
out of options. And then you get the Rule 5 rules on De Los Santos.
He's got to stay on the roster. So now you got two spots on your roster.
Oh,
in the name of asset acquisition, we need to keep these two guys there because if we nurse them through the season, we'll have more assets in our organization. I get it. But I'm sorry, Kyle Manzardo is better than David De Los Santos. And I don't know that it's worth playing this game all year to get De Los Santos in there. And Florial was free for the entire league. He was put on waivers. Anybody could have claimed him, and nobody did. So now you've got a guy that nobody else wanted that you could have gotten at any time, and you're gonna do weird games to keep him on your roster. And then the Miles Straw thing, like, I'm not sure. I think they should almost be sunk cost. Sorry, I know we owe you $5 million a year. Or if it's not a sunk cost, then at least make him your fourth outfielder and find some better situation in center. Maybe that's the idea with Florial, but I'm not sure he's better than Straw. Man, I don't know, dude. There's something I don't like about this. This makes me shake my head. I don't like it.
If you look at projections in the Bat X, which we've talked about, is generally a little lighter on prospects than other projection systems. Kyle Manzardo still, by WRC Plus, the seventh best hitter projected for the Guardians. He actually likes Tyler Freeman quite a bit as a really like part-time sort of player. But between it's Jose Ramirez, Josh Naylor, Freeman, Andrés Giménez, Ramon Laureano, and Bo Naylor, and then Manzardo, which says a lot about this roster.
For a team that really needs offense.
Yeah, I think this is silly.
Wait, you didn't say Kwan, did you?
Kwan's actually projected for the same WRC plus as Manzardo, just does it kind of a different way. And there's also the possibility, a distinct possibility, that Manzardo's just better than his projection because he's been better than what he was at AAA last year, and there's a lot going on. So I don't know. Like I just... Asset acquisition and retention at all costs seems like the plan here, and it doesn't make them better right now, and it might even hurt them a little bit in the long
run, too. Pushing them towards an actual platoon. I don't even know if it works platoon-wise. De Los Santos is a righty, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
And Florial's a lefty.
Okay, so that's actually going to be like a de facto platoon for them. Like there's,
seems like
it's going to be De Los Santos, Florial. And most of the league was like, nah.
We need some good
power
news
to you, Cleveland.
Yeah,
I mean, they're gonna have a pretty much a zero bat situation at short and center already, so you're gonna have a zero bat situation at short and center, and then you're adding a zero bat situation at DH of all places.
I think they should be playing Brian Arroquio at shortstop too, but you know.
Yeah, is it Gilbert Arias?
That's who they've got on the top of the depth chart right now. It doesn't matter. You could write it in however you want.
Let me see. The playing time situation is going to Jose Tenia, Tyler Freeman, and then Rocchio. So Rocchio has 31 plate appearances. Freeman has 31. Rocchio is not playing well this spring.
How do you, as an organization, love middle
Arias
infielders as much as the Guardians and not have a slam dunk solution that plays high in the order every single day in your lineup? How do you mess that up?
Because they make fake shortstops. They make guys that are shortstops in name, and you have to be really careful when you're scouting them as another team because they're going to sell you Tyler Freeman as a shortstop, and nobody else thinks he's a shortstop.
Okay, fair enough. We'll end the Guardians' criticism at this
sorry,
point.
Sorry if that was...
Yeah, we got a little carried away.
No, we love the Guardians. They're good.
They're okay.
They're okay.
They're just okay.
Yeah.
That's the truth. They're okay.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
On to some good news. Corey Seager actually could be ready for opening day, which a few weeks ago seemed impossible. And even if he doesn't make it, I found when I was putting the rankings together that I was a little higher on Seager than I expected to be. Because there's some Freddie Freeman-like qualities in what he does. And instead of giving you, you know, 10, 15 bags, he just gives you a little extra thump in terms of power. Back-to-back 33 home run seasons, he did it last year with 536 plate appearances. So when you start to look at Corey Seager, even when you bake in the added injury risk that he brings, given some of the major stuff he's dealt with in his career, some of the soft tissue stuff, some of the bad luck stuff, I get that you don't project him like Freeman by volume, but I came to the conclusion that of early round picks, people were maybe sidestepping Corey Seager more than they should have in drafts. And I think that might change. That might correct over these final couple of weeks. But this is really good news, even if he doesn't hit opening day, because it might not be a very lengthy absence once the season begins.
I believe by ADP, Seager and Ellie De La Cruz are like the players that you can get if you wait and don't get a starting pitcher in the first three rounds.
You can get both.
Hey, you can even get both, but
get both.
But there's a certain class of player, like I think Michael Harris is sort of end of second. You know, there's a tough rank that we'll talk about later who's in this group. There's a certain class of player that you just don't end up with if you take a starting pitcher in the first three rounds. And Seager's, I think, on that list. Another thing I texted you.
It's a new segment where we just put the phones up to the camera.
The limits of the Why Not This Guy Later game. So the limits of the Why Not This Guy Later game was inspired by why Ellie De La Cruz when you can get O'Neill De La Cruz later? I mean, O'Neill De La Cruz, yeah. Why not Ellie De La Cruz when you can get O'Neill Cruz later? Because, well, you know, O'Neill Cruz has some similarities to Ellie, but O'Neill hurt his ankle, and so his spring, like his stolen base numbers are a question. Stolen base numbers are fairly sticky, you know, in spring. So how often he takes off in spring is somewhat indicative of what happens. And O'Neill Cruz has one stolen base. That's a reason to take O'Neill Cruz. That's why O'Neill Cruz goes later, you know. And then you could play the game where it's like, if not O'Neill Cruz, then, you know, why not this guy later? I don't know. I don't have the name in front of me, but I saw somebody playing this. And then they said, well, you can play this game with almost anybody. And Corey Seager is like, well, why do I take a shortstop that's going to hit me 30 homers when I can get 30 homers later and I won't be getting steals from shortstop? Well, the 300 batting average is why. Because, like, the amount of people that are projected to hit 290 with 30 homers is really, really short. We have only seven guys in baseball projected to be to hit above 290 next season by the Bat X. And of those seven guys, one of them is Luis Arraez, and the other one's Freddie Freeman. I don't think they're hitting 30 homers. So there are only five guys in baseball that will hit 295 or better, or 290 or better, and hit 30 homers. And Corey Seager's on that list. Oh, Vlad Guerrero is another guy you can get. He's on that list. He's another guy you can get if you wait on pitching a little bit.
Right. If you trust the projection.
There is no, I will just get this later.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's a really good point. There are certain combinations of skills that you can't steal later on, or you're very unlikely to be able to steal. That, to me, would be the better way to build a roster foundation. Get the things you can't get later early, and find the other things that are a little more variable in the middle rounds. Find the 15 homer, 30 steal players that actually do live in the pick 100 to 175 range. You could take a few shots in there and do it. So, a lot to think about with Corey Seager maybe ticking up boards again. If he stays in that round three range, love him in that spot. I think that's just great value for an early round player that will be really, really good once he's back from this injury. The two guys ahead of Seager that are in the news that I think are fine are Bryce Harper and Aaron Judge. And they're in that cluster of guys you love to get late in round one, early in round two. If you're in a 12-team league, you could get both of those guys. That's an amazing start. But you may also have choices like Jose Ramirez or Yordan Alvarez or guys who are not actively dealing with something.
Harper's dealing with something?
Harper's been slowed by back stiffness this spring.
Old man disease.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So Jason Stark wrote about it, and it's just more of like a, hey, like he's kind of like absent from the lineup when he would ordinarily be in the lineup. And he hasn't had imaging or anything done to our knowledge. So there's not like a elevated level of concern, but it is the point in the spring now. If you're not out there, we're getting close to that window where if you're not out there on the days you're supposed to be out there doing the things that you ordinarily would do, you might be more bothered by something than previously was let on. So I'm not trying to create some kind of conspiracy with Harper or Judge. I'm more just bringing to the table as, do you start to worry, even with a player that you really like, that you really trust, when we get to the second half of March and they're consistently absent? And Jason pointed out a couple of the games that they had recently for the Phillies were four-hour bus rides. So if you have a minor anything, you're not getting on that bus if you're Bryce Harper. Like, there's no chance the Phillies would do that. And with Aaron Judge, he hasn't played a spring game since March 10th. He had some imaging done on his abdominal area, and they keep pushing back some of the hitting stuff he's supposed to be doing. So are you worried about either one of Harper or Judge in light of the current news? Because we're at this point, we're drafting almost every day. We got to make these decisions on a day-by-day basis. The discount you get's not going to be a lot. Like, generally, you're going to have to take them right around that 1-2 turn. Like, middle of round two is the biggest discount you're going to get based on what we know right now about both of these players.
I'm just a little bit less worried about Harper. I mean, he's been in games more recently. There's a stat for you. He's played.
He's playing.
Games played. A new stat here. I think the thing with Judge that's so interesting is that if you run the auction calculator, he almost always shows up as a top two player. But that's with like 600 plate appearances. And I don't know if I want to segue so quickly, but I keep getting really close to saying this person's name. And so I know I'm supposed to say his name later on the rundown, but it gives me a little bit of this class of players that's really tough to rank, which is the Luis Robert bucket. I think Judge is getting close to that type of difficult rank where we have research that suggests that projecting injury is something that should just be mostly regressed to the mean. You know, it's like, it's not that injury risks aren't as bad as we think, you know, or that projecting injury is really, really tough and tougher than just looking at that guy and be like, well, that guy's injured all the time. You know, like, it's not that easy. Also just tough to rank because you're in the midst always, it seems, of getting news updates about their health while you're drafting, you know, and you're just like, you're about to press the button on Judge. You're like, maybe I should do one more Google search before I press go on Judge or Robert, you know, he's just like, let me make sure he's healthy right now. And if you do that Google search, you're gonna be like, I don't know that Judge is healthy right now. So he's just gonna keep dropping and dropping for me. And the risk versus reward for both, I think, is almost top five player. I think you could say that about Robert. Like, if Robert played 650 plate appearances this year, he could be a top five player
even on that team.
Yeah, because you're thinking like runs and RBI.
Yeah, I just think of counting stats. Would the counting stats be there? I mean,
and usually possibly. Your top five players are also on good teams and like have the big runs and RBI. You're right about
that. I present Bobby Witt Jr. though.
Okay,
as an
but
example,
first round.
Come
they're both
it.
First round yeah. players. Yeah. They're both first round players if they're healthy all year. And so the reward proposition is there. But, you know, usually you're not taking that kind of a risk in the first couple of rounds.
I know we were just talking about games played in spring training. The other thing that Jason pointed out about Harper that I thought was kind of interesting is the home runs. Bryce Harper has not hit a home run this spring. And you might say, okay, whatever. Who cares? It's 22 at-bats. And I think that's generally how my brain works. But when you look back at what Bryce Harper usually does in spring training, what things are happening in a spring when Bryce Harper goes out and is himself, he hit 8 homers in spring training in 2022. He hit 4 the spring before that. He hit 4 in 10 games the spring before that. He always hits homers in spring training. Again, could be something, could be nothing. That was like the theme of what Jason put out there. I'm like, dang it, this is messing with my head. This is, I don't think it was completely designed for that, but I don't want to think about these sorts of things.
Yeah, that gets a little too resulty.
Well, the launch angle too, he's pounding the ball into the ground. He doesn't normally do that.
Let me see what I've got here. I did put up all the Bryce Harper 1.6 launch angle. Is that right?
That was another thing of the story. He's like, he's just hitting the ball on the ground. Like, oh, that's a thing you do when you're not feeling right. But now, hey, I will go back to one of the core tenets of your usage of rolling graphs and StatCast data. This goes all the way back to the first time you ever talked about it at First Pitch like 5 years ago. The Carlos Correa example of, here's the dip, here's where I didn't feel good. So you could have this. This can happen. This can happen any time of year. Are we looking at something that's happening in February and March and reacting differently than if it was just happening in the middle of the season for a handful of days where
he
for
could
a
have
week
a
or two wasn't himself.
Plate appearance.
I'm sure he
streak.
Does.
I'm sure he has tons of them.
I'm sure he does. Because he's human.
Yeah, I'm still leaning less worried. Also, just like, you know, Judge mentioned that the toe thing is just going to be something he has to deal with his whole career.
That to me, when I heard that, I was like, yeah, that's just how injuries work. If you hurt yourself, like Mike Trout's back, he has to do extra work for his back forever. Yeah. There's stuff that you pick up these chronic injuries or you have a devastating injury and you have to treat your body differently post-injury than you did pre-injury. And it doesn't really mean anything. It just means you have to do more
work.
That
means that's why previous injury also predicts future injury. That's like one of the few things we've got. So I don't know. Like, do we have an injury for Harper is my question. You know
right.
what I mean?
Is he actually hurt or is he just sore and being rested because why would you push him right now?
Yeah. And then we do have injury for Judge. Is that a distinction?
I mean, having an MRI versus not having an MRI probably is worth something.
That is definitely a difference.
Worried enough to get imaging
done.
This
is the silly parsing that we have to do when we want to try and pick someone who's in this bucket, which is makes them a tough rank. Where do you rank them? And then how, even if you rank them a certain way, is that really what you're going to do in the draft? Because I've definitely spent at least 3 drafts where Luis Robert Jr. is the number one guy on my board. I've found other things to do, you know,
right.
Like I've been like, I'm just going to take a picture here.
Oh, I'll just take George Kirby instead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm going to kick that can down the street a little bit.
And then somebody else gets Luis Robert and it's not your problem.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And the difference here is that Robert's healthy right now. So the tough ranks aspect of Robert is the nagging stuff that he's dealt with and like look at his games played since 2021, 68, 98, 145. He's coming off the year where he mostly stayed healthy, had a knee injury late last year. That's not a problem for him anymore. Now we have it. Now we have that proof. Is this the high watermark or is this a sign of things to come? That's why it's a tough rank for Luis Robert right now. Because I'm with you. By skills, by output, even on a bad team, he has first round talent. He possesses that. And how you rank first round talent with third or fourth round health concerns and a 12th round supporting cast, that's tough.
Yeah.
I feel like that was generous, 12th round supporting cast.
And like, again, I don't really care about his spring training results. Interesting that he's been hitting a bunch of fly balls, but not too interested in all of this in terms of results, other than the fact that he's got 36 plate appearances and seems to be playing regularly. It's weird that there's a bunch of people who have more spring training plate appearances on his team. Like Dominic Fletcher has 14 more plate appearances. But they're really trying to figure out if Dominic Fletcher should be given that everyday starting role that he seems to have been given. And I think for Robert, they're just like, we just want you to be ready for the season. Like,
we want you healthy. We want to be careful with you now. We know what you can do. We just want you to feel as healthy as you can feel on day one of the season and keep you as healthy as we can all season. Because any prayer we have of being even respectable for a brief period of time hinges on you being healthy and productive.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Other tough ranks, though. O'Neill Cruz, you mentioned him a little earlier. And I think any player coming off of a big injury, any young player, he's not the only one that fits in this bucket. Like Vinny Pasquantino fits into this bucket, and they're very different players in terms of what we expect from them. When you have a mostly lost season due to a major injury, and you come back the next year, and the projections still like you, and the draft market still likes you, that's a really tough player to rank, because you got to plant the flag, you got to decide, am I in? Is this actually a player that's going to go two or three rounds earlier in future seasons? Based on projections, there's a reason to be optimistic about O'Neill Cruz based on spring training. You mentioned the speed. He's got five homers. He's not stealing bases because you don't steal bases when you get to touch them all. You eliminate the possibility. Five spring training homers is like, this dude's feeling good. He's swinging the bat well. Everything seems like it's pretty locked in right now.
I really love the walk rate, especially because if you look at O'Neill Cruz's rookie season, the big question was, you know, what's his plate discipline going to look like? You know, is he really a viable bat if he's going to walk 7% of the time and strike out 35% of the time? And what we saw in the rolling graphs for O'Neill Cruz was that over time he made better decisions, and he carried that into that very small sample at the beginning of last year. And we saw an explosion in his walk rate and a real big reduction in the strikeout rate. And to see him come back this spring and be walking 16% of the time and striking out 25% of the time really makes me think that he's going to come back at the upper ends of his potential. He's also 25 years old, so he's in the peak of his, I think the reason why peak in baseball is sort of a little bit hard to nail down and kind of between 25 and 28 is that your athletic skills are only going down. So if you look at sprinters in the 100-yard dash or whatever, you know, or is it 100 meters? 100 meters. Nobody does 100 yard.
Meters. 100. Yeah, we're not just like American high school championships might be yards for some dumb reason, but the rest of the world.
The difference
meters.
Between a 100-meter and a 100-yard dash is probably like, you know, 30 centimeters. But anyway, if you look at the guys in 100 meters, they peak in their early 20s. That's a sort of physical peak. But baseball has all these learned skills, the strike zone, anticipation, what these pitchers are doing, all these shapes they're throwing at me, all these sort of learned skills. And I think the learned skills pretty much just go up as you, and my evidence for this is that your swing rate goes down pretty much over your career. Your swing rate just kind of just goes down. The aging curve for the swing rate is just down, you know? So that to me says that, like, oh, that's learning the game. Those are the learned skills. So your learned skills are pretty much just always going up as you play more and more, and your athleticism is going down. Well, he's showing us that his learned skills are there, and that the things that we saw him learn, that he actually learned them. That's what I'm seeing in the spring training process stats. The athleticism, though, you know, and then everything that we're doing this, we're basing this on small samples because that's all he's given us. And we try to look at like, oh, he hit the ball 122 miles per hour in 2022. And even last year, 116, like this guy hits the ball super hard. But what is his barrel rate going to look like? What is his conversion between raw power and game power going to look like? So I have to admit, I don't like to look at spring training results, but those five homers also leap off the page for me. So I think this is a guy who can really hit like 250, 260 with 30 homers, but I think it might only be like 10 steals. Just thinking about that ankle and, you know, how they slow walked him coming back off that ankle, and they didn't have him play, you know, in certain places where he could have played. I'm thinking they're going to be really careful with that ankle.
I'm really not sure about the ankle. I think that's a safe assumption, but if he had three fewer homers, I wonder if he might have a few extra steals. I think it's really hard to get a sense of
if some of those are doubles,
how much he would be running if things were playing out differently. I came in a little light on O'Neill Cruz relative to the field in the initial hitter rankings. Got him at like 48th among hitters. I'm not gonna get him if I keep him there. If I'm gonna actually have
the would
O'Neill
you rather
Cruz,
proposition,
looking at the weekend, so the NFBC's main event drafts, the highest stakes, like big one. There's some higher stakes ones that aren't like a big contest. This is one that has the overall component. Four drafts over the weekend, so decent sample. Big old $1,750 entry fee. O'Neill Cruz, pick
invested
54.
Human beings.
Yeah, people that have thought a little bit about what they might want to do. 54 overall, range of 46 to 67. At 67, my
third
ranking
round?
Is going to get him.
Fourth round.
But now, so he's starting to live in the previous sort of like dead zone group of hitters where Royce Lewis is kind of in that range now, right? Similar type of player. We've seen some interesting things.
These are really exciting young players that could be really, really good. They could even jump into first round talent. Like that's how good Royce Lewis and O'Neill Cruz are.
And when I landed on with Lewis, even though his injury history is even worse than Cruz's with the two ACL tears, is the skills are so solid across the board.
He's a little bit better in terms of like contact and other things, yeah.
It was easy to jump when I was already pitcher-pitcher. But you have to think about what you're going to do if you're balanced. If you're hitter-pitcher, pitcher-hitter, whatever combination up top, and then something else in the third, and you're saying, okay, I'm going best available. Because best available is less obvious. If you're choosing apples versus oranges, hitters versus pitchers, are you taking a first closer in Johan Duran, or are you taking Lewis or O'Neill Cruz? Are you taking a starter like a Grayson Rodriguez or a Max Fried? Or are you taking O'Neill Cruz? Or are you taking a Randy Arozarena versus O'Neill Cruz? Those are all, there's a lot of would you rathers kind of mashed together there. But it's like an interchange on a highway. Like you have a lot of directions you can choose depending on what you've done up to that point.
One thing that I am sort of solidifying is an approach to the closer. And I think I would take O'Neill Cruz and Royce Lewis over a top closer, you know, every day of the week. And the reasoning that I'm coming to is just that I think, you know, there's a game trends theory, which is just that closers are getting nastier and nastier up and down, you know, with pitch design and, you know, just the velo that's there. I think that, you know, we're getting closer and closer to like at least 30 guys who throw 99 with great stuff in the big leagues. You know what I mean? And the closer we get to that, the closer it is that like, okay, everybody's got one. Right? And if everybody's got one, then you just have to identify that guy. You know what I mean? And I'm not, it's not there yet. You know, I don't think the Royals have that guy yet. They just sent down McMillan, the guy that we kind of liked in that role. You know, there are teams that don't have that necessarily. And the Rockies may never.
I mean, they're a lot of reasons for that.
Yeah, not and some of it being altitude and just what it does to pitches. So, but the closer we get to that, and I think we are, you know, traveling on that in that direction, the more that it makes sense to just take the next guy later rather than take the top guy there. And like, just think about the would you rather game or the why not this guy later game. We need a name for that.
Well, it was draft this, not
jingle,
that.
Draft,
it was,
yeah, we tried. We were trying some stuff out.
It was
take this, not that. But
swing or spit.
Yeah. So gross. So the game there, I think, actually is tighter than it is with other things. Like, I know why I take Ellie De Cruz over O'Neill Cruz. Like, I'm pretty sure I know that. But why do I take Emmanuel Classe over Camila Doval? I'm not as quite as sure of that.
Okay, that's a good way to describe it. I could see that. I would say the whatever this game's called, again, submissions via Discord, especially.
Yeah, Discord.
Have a chat.
Live get on this one.
need a little assistance here, even though we're both supposed to use words professionally. Sometimes we still need help. You know, yeah. Consult dictionaries, thesauruses, friends, whatever it might be. I think the I'll wait for this guy game has diminishing returns. It's like playing the one red paperclip game, but in reverse. It's like starting with the speedboat and trading down from the speedboat. It's like, you had a chance at something better, and you passed on something better for the next thing. And if you do that enough times, you're down to the paperclip. That's an extreme example. You're not going all the way to the paperclip. But if you think O'Neill Cruz is a foundational player and you'd like him at cost, I'm not going to argue against this. You do have kind of an interesting, similarly profile player right there next to him. I think Jazz Chisholm Jr. is actually a really good tools sort of comp for O'Neill Cruz. They both have health grade concerns. They both have some issues against lefties. They both should play a lot anyway. They both can hit the ball pretty hard. Cruz kind of in a higher
premium
level
defensive positions where their team would rather they just played every day.
So even if they get buried in the lineup against lefties, they're probably going to play against lefties. I think they both have growth potential still, even though, you know, Jazz has a little more big league experience at this point. So I would say, at least in the case of the I'll just wait for someone else game, you can kind of draw a line of what are my backup options and say, okay, at that point, I have to pivot to a different player type or something else in the range because the next option after Jazz Chisholm is not actually like O'Neill Cruz at all. It's too much of a bad replica. That used to work before the jerseys were bad themselves. But it's that kind of thinking where it's like, okay, they always say if you cloned yourself, each clone gets worse. It's the same kind of thing.
And then you've got the Eno who just keeps walking into the wall.
11th Eno is so lost at the Fish concert right now. It's just
keeps walking into a wall.
The concert ended 3 days ago, and he's just bumping into a wall up near the stage. And someone's got to go get 11th Eno. But that's my point. Like, just if you're going to play the I'll wait game, draw the big red line on the cheat sheet, highlight it, whatever you do, have the signal of, at this point, I have to do it a different way. I can't get 30-30 from the next guy I wait for. I have to do 25-5, and then I have to find the inverse player that fits a little bit later on. Because those types of players exist and pair well together. And I think that's what I mean when I say you have to be willing, you have to be able to build a good team when you don't get your guys. It's something I said on Joe Arrico's pod last week. Like, you just have to be ready for it because we all like a lot of the same players. It's kind of a simple fact of how this game works.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing. You have to have like multiple options. You know, you can't get fixated on one guy. Just saying what you just said another way. Like, I was just thinking about my TGFBI draft where I started a little bit batting average poor. You know, there was a big reaction to that. But I had highlighted, you know, like five guys who were going to help me in batting average that I could get at some point. And I got a little fixated on Luis Arraez at one point where I was like, oh, he would be really fit my draft right now. But then I just got Masataka Yoshida and I felt like I did the same thing. You know, I highlighted my like five guys that I thought I wanted and I got one of them. Just try not to back yourself into a corner is another way of putting it. Oh, is Luis Arraez a tough rank for us too?
I think he's a tough rank for me because I wrote a little bit about this in our recap for The Athletic. I think ranking players is hard because the decisions you have to make are not necessarily just taking the best player off the list. I would argue that Arraez is particularly tough because up through the first 10, maybe the first 15 rounds, you can rank players that way and you can kind of draft off that. And then from there, you have to have a lot more like reason for choosing each player when you do. Like my example was middle infielders that play, like veterans like Tim Anderson and Ahmed Rosario are hard to rank against Jordan Lawler and even Jordan Westberg, where playing time, at least up front, might not be there. So it's like if you need playing time, you take the old guy.
Playing time versus upside, yeah.
Arraez is tough because I think he's more valuable when you build the right sort of team for him.
he's more valuable for my low batting average approach, you know, that I can, thumbs up. I agree. he's more valuable for my low batting average approach where I can sandwich him together with Tatis and Ellie De La Cruz and Lindor, and who gave me the power and speed, right? He's not that valuable if you kept your batting average up. You know, like, what's the value if your batting average is right now is like 270, 275 after five rounds or six rounds? You do not need Luis Arraez. You have a good batting average, and you might be number one in your league in batting average. There is no extra points beyond that in most leagues. You know, I guess points leagues, and, you know, they're different. But, like, in most categorical leagues, there's no extra bonus for, you know, being 20 points above in batting average out of everybody. So, yeah, Luis Arraez is a tough rank because he's perfect for some teams and useless for other teams.
Right. The concept is, it's actually, if you ever play backgammon, it's called wastage. It's when you, like, you know, you roll and you don't even need everything you rolled. So you don't take advantage. Like, winning the category by miles is actually kind of bad in the grand scheme of things, because it probably means you didn't allocate draft day or in-season resources properly, and you likely underperformed somewhere else. Exact same concept. So I think you have to be careful with that with any imbalanced player. It doesn't mean those players aren't good. Esteri Ruiz is the speed example of this. Everyone keeps saying he could steal 70 bases or he could lose his job. I agree with that assessment. I think that's the proper assessment of what could happen to him this year.
But also, even if he just plays all year, you need about 24 homers or so per lineup slot in 15 team leagues, and it only goes up in lower leagues, and you're gonna maybe get six from him. So you have to beat homers projections in other slots by 18.
Right. Assuming some of the adjustments that he's making haven't completely paid off, right? He's trying to hit the ball harder.
He's trying to hit for more power, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see if it actually works.
Think about this. Like, let's say you just wanted to smush two players together and be like, Esteri Ruiz plus, right? There's no player like that, at least not by projections. The highest projected home run total is Aaron Judge with 45, which I don't believe. And then Kyle Schwarber with 42 and Matt Olson with 40. So even if you smush Matt Olson together with Esteri Ruiz, you're still light on power.
It's trickier because a lot of the high-end power guys go so early. I think you'd have to get down to, like, the Anthony Santander, Jorge Soler, Marcell Ozuna.
You'd probably have to take three of those almost. You know what I mean? Like, you'd have to take two or three of those guys because you're not, yeah. Like, Matt Olson, you can't be like, I'm going to take Matt Olson now to set up the Esteri Ruiz pick later. No, you're just taking Matt Olson because he's great. You know?
The way I've been using players like this for the last couple of years is saying, if something went wrong early, then they become players I target. But in a vacuum, they're not necessarily players I want, because I hopefully have just balanced things out better than needing to take that shot and try to get the high ceiling in bags or the extra average to carry me. I think Arraez is a nice player. He pops in the auction calculator the way you'd expect him to, but I just think it's a little bit weird when you get so much value from that batting average category in particular. Other tough player group, I put Junior Caminero kind of at the top. It's the guys that were wondering, how long are we waiting? I find it really, really difficult. When I'm looking at rankings, I see Junior Caminero down kind of in that Colt Keith, Jordan Westberg, young players, like, very different situations right now. Keith looks like maybe close to an everyday guy. Westberg, maybe close to an everyday guy.
I think Jackson Churio is the center fielder. Isn't that the vibe you're getting out of camp? He's playing center field every day.
I think he's the guy. I do. I think Churio's, I think he avoids this conversation.
You're only hedging bets because that's the smart thing to do. I'm trying to add a little bit more vibes reporting to my oeuvre. The vibes reporting I'm getting is he's making the team. He's the center fielder.
My heart could be smashed into a million pieces. So I am preparing myself to not have it broken into quite so many pieces.
Westberg is playing a lot, though. Westberg, you know, in terms of plate appearances in the spring, he's playing a lot. I mean, he's making the team. But you're right. There's certain, like, slightly different groupings where, like, making the team and playing or not even making the team. Caminero's not making the team. Kyle Manzardo is not making the team is the most likely thing. They are maybe more exciting if they play every day than Jordan Westberg. Jordan Westberg is making the team, but how much is he playing? So it's like this little slider you've got where one is upside and one is playing time. And then yeah, for every player in this group, it's just they're in weird spots.
What if I told you that Junior Caminero was a better player at AA at the same age as Jackson Churio last season? Would you buy that takeaway? I mean, Churio went 22 homers, 43 steals.
I'd buy it at the plate.
Right. But the difference in fantasy value is the speed. Like, that's the huge, huge part of Churio's game.
If we had a good wins above replacement for them, I would say that Churio's is probably better.
Okay. It's close enough to entertain it as Caminero's a special player.
Yeah,
that's what makes this hard. It's like he's not just a prospect. He looks like he is an elite prospect. And waiting on an elite prospect, I think, is different than waiting on a good one. And that is a subjective evaluation. That's why it's so damn hard.
He's also interesting because he's in this bucket of like, we are so hype focused and we love to like assign number one prospects, you know, and it was like, you know, it was Churio, but now it's Langford, you know. Oh, but maybe it's Jackson Holliday. But what happened to Junior Caminero? People were talking about him as a number one prospect just a little bit. No, he's yesterday's news. We've moved on. We've got better players now. Yeah, Caminero is in an interesting spot. If it was a different team than the Rays, I'd be advocating right now for like, hey, he's the sneaky, you know, way late, you know, throw that dart, you know, maybe he'll make his way onto this team because of the low injury, you know, like maybe there's a little bit of an opening now, but it's the Rays, man, and I have no idea what they're gonna do.
I think the question would be like, how long is the built-in I'm going to hold this guy window for if you're going to take the late flyer? Just going back to that same weekend handful of main event drafts, early pick was 288, late was 429. I mean, 429 that's barely, is almost your last pick. Like that's like 28th round, 29th round.
I kind of love him there, but the proposition is you're going to keep him on your roster. Like it's just it's almost irrelevant where you take him once you've made the decision that you think he's worth a bench spot when you only have 7 bench spots.
Unless you want to go the route of just cutting him as soon as you can't keep him. Like if you're good at that, some people aren't. I don't know if I am. I think it's something I still have to get better at. Is saying, I've got this spot for now, and now I'm going to let him go. And I know someone else might get him, but I just had him in case someone got hurt and they called him up in the first week or two of the season before the roster got tight. At this price, you can do that. But I think what makes it tough to rank him and to give advice about him is I think he's a lot better than where I have him ranked. But because of the uncertainty about when he's going to play, I don't know where to fit him in the overall picture.
There's a really stupid little very specific NFC thing you could do with Caminero. You could draft him with your last pick, cut him, and then you know that he's been drafted in your league and he's on the free agency wire. Whereas other people might think he wasn't drafted, might forget he was drafted, and think he's part of Fabapalooza at some point.
Right.
You know, they have to wait for him to come up. And then you can just search for him in the player grouping, find him, you know, 2 weeks ahead of when you think he's going to come up and get him back on your roster later.
How rostered he is will dictate how well you can hide him. And I think he'll be rostered enough where it won't be easy to hide him, but players like this can be hidden that way. Because, yeah, to have been drafted means they'll be eligible to be picked up before coming out of the minor league. So I think that's
how
really
some people got Ellie De La Cruz last year for like $5 in free agency.
Got to be a week early.
Yeah, they just did it a week early because they looked for him. So that's something, if you play NFC, you should probably identify some lists of the top prospects and then maybe every week just do a search, you know, just to see who's actually in your player pool. Because the way it works, some player pools, some settings out there, some leagues, the player doesn't appear in the player pool till they've played, unless they've been drafted. So that's what we're talking about here. But yeah, I think generally this is a tough group to rank. It's a little bit like on the pitching side when you're trying to rank somebody like a Shane Baz. Or Shane Baz, I think, is a perfect one where it's just like, oh, this guy's nasty, and he's going to be good when he's in there, but when's he going to come up? And pretty sure he's going to come up, but can I kind of massage the spot until he gets up?
I think that's a great comparison, just looking across to the pitcher side. And again, you can really only stash one in a lot of the NFBC style leagues, but a lot of other leagues too. Even some leagues have smaller benches than the NFBC does. Some leagues have five-man benches.
Some leagues have no benches. It's crazy.
That's a little extreme.
Yeah.
There are a few other groups of hitters that are tough to rank. I think we'll save those for a future episode to avoid this one being a megapod. We're going to have our tough ranks for pitchers on our episode on Tuesday. If that somehow comes up short time-wise, we'll get to a few more tough ranking hitters, but I think we'll have to come back around to a few other.
We're also, you know, heading towards a bit of a pitcher-hitter split maybe for our live pods in New York this week. If you haven't heard yet, live pods at Other Half. We're going to put on the Soul Games around 3 and just have a meet and greet before. Start settling down at 6. The pods will be at 6:30. There's a Wednesday and Thursday at Other Half at the Domino location in Williamsburg. So the Williamsburg Domino location and the sandwich, which I think we're heading towards naming Bulgogi Bomb, is so good. I want to eat it now. And there's a special beer, and it'll be a lot of fun. We have special guests Nick Pollock on Wednesday and Mike Petriello on Thursday.
Yeah, if you can take a guess, the pitcher-centric episode will likely be the Wednesday episode, and the hitter-centric episode will likely be the Thursday episode for, you know, pretty good reasons. Be sure to check out The Craft, too. That's the Eno Pollock pod that's dropping each and every week too. That's one you want to get into the rotation. Be sure to check out the Discord listener league link. As we said earlier, got to get in now. We're on to league 6 as of right now. 10
wow,
o'clock.
We passed 1,000.
Over 1,000. 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Tuesday night is when it locks for the entire season. You won't be able to submit your lineup after that. So get in ASAP.
There's no lineup setting. It's almost like a gladiator is a type of league where you just, there's no bench. You just pick a starting lineup and you just plug it in the computer and somebody wins in the end of the year.
Yeah. Hard to beat that. Low maintenance. Just one more league. Absolutely fine to do it because you'll have it all buttoned up by the time you go to sleep on Tuesday night. So that's going to do it for this episode of Rates and Barrels. We are back with you on Tuesday.
Thanks for listening.